Session number 1766, Mr. Thomas Lawton, Reel 17.
Mr. Lawton, Reel 17. We were talking about the camp at Posen, Mr. Lawton, and the fact that at one point the Germans seemed to be in the act of shooting you. How did that come about?
Yes. Well, in 48, all water was drawn from a well, pumped from a well. The water wasn't too good, and I complained about it. I even went to the commandant about it. And I said that if they didn't do something about that water, there would be an epidemic in the camp because that water was rank. The well had never been used for years. However, one chap was pumping and he pumped a rat out of the well, half a rat, rotten, the tail end. So when I heard this, I said, right, keep it. I want that. I want that to take and show the covenant. Now then, there was one man there, one officer there, responsible for work parties. He had to get work parties out to the various jobs. It was his duty. So I said, look, we want fresh water laid into this camp. I said, not take much doing. There's water there, we know there. It's just going to be laid across that ground. Not take a lot of doing. Yes, it will be done. Well, I says, I'll stop the men going out to work if it's not done. I says, because I'm not going to drink that. It's not fit to wash with, never mind drink. Now we've got the half rat. And I said, I want the commandant to see this. And I kept it, we did see the commandant. But anyhow, I told everybody, I says, you're not going out to work, mate. I said, you can parade in the passage. It was a big tunnel passage. So there'd be 350 men at least. There was about 500 to 700 men in the camp, and we about 350 going out to work parties. And I said, stop there, right? So the man in charge of the work parties, of course, was one that says, no, there's nobody going out to this camp until I get a promise that they're going to put fresh water in. Oh. He says, I am responsible for getting work parties out. And work parties are going out. Now, I says, there's not a man will move from there until I get a promise. All right, he says, I sent for the duty company. What? The duty company? Oh, the duty company was a duty company that would open fire on you as quick as possible. And sure enough, the duty came at the double, a company of men. And this man stood and he says, Sommelier, if they didn't move, he said, I'll give the order to fire. In this tunnel, and here's a company of men, and the man in charge of the officer in charge of the company, he went like that to the officer that was in charge of the work parties, and I'm standing there, and he said, on the count of three, right, they will fire. Point blank. I said, well, there's nobody going to move. Well, it's up to you. The duty company's up there. The man gives the order about load. There were 25 bullets slunk back and 25 bullets went into the breeches. Ready. And he's waiting for the signal, 1, 2, 3. The men are standing there. So I says, right, better get the promise, nobody moves. And I went into the tunnel beside them. And this bloke said, 1. And the men start to move. Start pushing from the back. Well, if they're pushing from the back, the front's got to move. Eh? Of course, they start to move. Now it's starting to come out. They did that. And where they went?
Just waved them away.
Eh?
He waved them away.
As soon as the men moved out that door, he waved away. And when the work party as it passed, they said, bravo. Yeah. They were all in the parties, you know. So some time later, I said to him, he said to me, Salmida, I was pleased that they moved. Yeah. I says, would you have given the word of command to fire? Yeah. You would. I said, that would have been a bloody massacre. Yeah. But he says, you wouldn't give. I can't give. He says, my duty to get the work parties out. I'm pleased to move. I said, well, I'll let you know the secret. What? I told them to move. What? I said, I had it arranged. Not with the front men. Who would be frightened in any case and wishing to hell something would happen. I said, well, men at the back, I told them as soon as I come into this tunnel and stand, start pushing. You're the men at the back. You've got nothing to be worried about. Start pushing. And I says, that's how the men began to move out. The front men didn't do anything about it. But the rear men did. And they had to move because the forces were behind them. He says, that's true. I says, yeah. I says, you'd have given the word of fire, wouldn't you? He says, yes. I'll tell you something. There were blanks on the rifle. I says, is that correct? Yes. And I wrote a little story about that double bluff. And that's perfectly true. I knew the men would move. As soon as I stepped in there, they would start pushing. There's no fear there. But he would have even given the order to fire. He said, yes, I would give the order to fire. I said, that would be a massacre, lad. He said, I'll tell you something. There were dummies and blanks at the head of that. So you see how serious the thing was. But he said to me, well, Sergeant, we will take that rat across to the commandant. He says, the commandant knows all about this, by the way. And there's maybe something you don't know. So we went up the commandant to her in the commandant's office. To him. And the commandant nearly puked when he saw the rat. He says, is that it? He said to me, he didn't speak English, but did the best he could. Saw me there. There was a workman in. Well, I say a workman, he was a tradesman. But he was dressed. There's a plan on the desk. He said, look, I says, that's the moat. Yes. Pipeline on paper. Well, I said, and I looked at this officer that took us in. He'd known all about it. I says, well, well. And the commandant said, it is Christmas. So, it is time of goodwill. Eh? Fresh water will be in tonight. I said, no. Yes? I said, it's only on paper. But it's all arranged. The plan was there, marked out, every section. And the men who dug the grip were German guards. Because Englishmen kind of dig, you know. The British guards got tired and said, keep a hold of my rifle, give me that pick. It was only about that deep, the grip. The German guards dug the grip to show the Englishmen how to walk with it. And the lads, my lad, you're good walkers. Yes, stop. And when it came to putting the pipe up over the trestle, why, the Englishmen wouldn't know where to start. But the Germans did. They either put the trestles up, pipe across. There was water in that night. The commandant said, time of goodwill. I said, if it'll not be in tonight, yes, it will. He said, press this one on paper. Yes, but that's the pipeline. And this was the man who planned it, you see. So, what was a nasty situation turned out to be a good situation. And the men went out to camp, didn't know there was going to be that in there tonight. It was in that night.
This was Christmas 1941, would it be?
41 when we went into Posen. Yes, that's correct. And we were pumping water from a well, and I said, that water's not good. But the Germans said, it's all right. And when we pumped this rat out, I said, well, if we don't get a promise, there's nobody going to work. And that was how it happened. Double blow.
Did the Red Cross parcels begin to come into this camp?
Yes. They came in at Red... in fact, that is almost when the letters began to arrive. I had Red Cross parcels at the same time. And at that time, we used to get one parcel among four or five of us. And that's about the same time as the Red Cross parcels began to come in. Not one for each man, but one among four or five. Still, it was all right. And mail came in at the same time. And that was the first mail we got. So you see, we could be 18 months without mail.
Was it when the Red Cross parcels arrived that you really could get into bartering and...
Yes.
Black marketing and what
oh,
have you.
Oh, yes. You see, that is the period when we could barter for cigarettes with a packet of tea to the Germans. The tea had already been used and dried and put back in the packets. We kept the packets, eh? And the German tea, English tea, English tea. And I don't think it would have the difference. But, yes. And bartering took place on a big scale. Even on the work parties, they were taking soap out with them, and English chocolate, and sometimes cigarettes. And the poor would do anything for it, see. And the lads, when they went on the various work parties, seemed to know certain people, and they took stuff out from them, and they brought stuff back. The trouble was, you see, coming back, they were searched, because they weren't allowed to carry anything in. But they had means of doing it. And the best way to do it was get the guard on your side. Bribe him. There was a very special job called Davidovsky. It was a meat factory. And they used to send tinned meat up to the Eastern Front. And a very special guard had to go on there. The men that went on there had to be very smart and very dudes. And we had a lot of guardsmen. And we got new uniforms when we were there in Fort 8, new boots, everything. Had been there a while, obviously. And the guardsmen even made their badges out of some tin. Eh? Very special party. And they complained about the sentry. They said the sentry was scruffy. In fact, if they didn't mind, they didn't need a sentry. They would go to the job themselves. But the Germans couldn't see it that way. So the guard had to get examined, inspected, before he went out. And on this job, apparently there was a Polish woman, or a German woman, in charge. But the guard was there, but he was just there for that purpose. She controlled them. And she loved English chocolate, and she loved English cigarettes. And the lads loved her. And of course, there was a little bit of shenanigan going on, you see. And then one bloke said, he's going to split on it. Obviously, he wasn't getting away with it, you see. Maybe he wasn't getting the chocolate. But the point was, it was a good job. The only point was that the lads started to puncture the tins. They had horseshoe nails. And when they were stacking the tins, they were puncturing them. By the time they got to the Eastern Front, it would be rotten, see? And of course, it took a long time for word to come back. So the Davidovsky job was wiped out. The Englishmen, you couldn't trust them.
Can you tell me how the working party system worked in the camp? You as an NCO didn't go
out. I never went out.
How did the system work?
Well, all right, there's a contractor out there somewhere. He wants so many men for a job, see? Now, at one time, they would come round and say, is any Tishas here, any joiners? Is any this, any that, any that? Eh? In the beginning, everybody was farmers. Everybody wanted to be on a farm. The Germans never heard of many, so many, many farmers. There's no miners. Ah, but there was. The Germans phoned them all. And there was one daft bloke from Spenny Moor, even got a pair of pit boots, said old. And when I saw them, I said, hey, they're pit boots. Aye, but they're good for this weather. I said, the Germans recognize them, man, as pit boots. And I said, they'll take you for a pitman. I bet they get you in the pits. He says, a lot, you know. They didn't. But things like that, you see. And Davidovsky, we lost that job through the men punching the tins. But it was a good job, and a great deal of bartering went on. And in Posen, there was a place called Fisher Eistrasse. It was a red lamp situation. And I went out. There was a Scottish paper. Murdo McCloud's brother Bill. Murdo was a sergeant major, and Bill was a paper in the Black Watch or something, you know. And he says, Tommy, any chance of you taking my place on that party? Just for a couple of days. He says, I've got a lot of washing to do, see? I says, the guard would recognize us. He says, no, he wouldn't. There's about 20 men. There's a party of 40 men, but when they went to a certain place, they split. And he says, if you get on that party, you turn right. They'll tell you where to turn. They know you. And I saw the nastiest looking German, bull-necked German. Oh, I says, hey, Herman. And he came with us. When we cut off 20 that way, he came with us. Oh, I says, him and I'll fall out. We got onto this job. It was a building site. Big cabin. We got into the cabin. Soon we got in, the men got their cards out. Start playing cards. Herman sat down in the chair, lit his pipe, put his rifle up against the wall. He says to me, how long have you been a prisoner? Well, I says, nearly 3 years. Have you seen the wife? I said, no. Oh, he said, that's not natural. He took another chap and me outside. He says, look, the girls going to the officers and that, see? And he shouts, Jindopri. He said in Polish, hello, good day. And there were Germans. Eh? But anyway, he did get a couple to come across. He said to them, they said, the Frenchman. They said, no, Englishman. Oh, he says, Red Cross, chocolate, cigarettes, soap. It was all arranged for next year. Good. But the men were working also in an engine shed. There's a lot of Polish women in the engine shed, and all they wanted was linens and that, and none of the best for the men, you know. Ah. So the very day that these lasses were going to come was the day when we got shifted from there into the engine sheds, you see. There was nothing in there. But the men had their underpants and had vests and had chocolate and everything to give. And the bloody stuff, the poor had not, but where they got the meat from, eggs, all like that, see. And recently they've been on about condoms being used for very special purposes. The men used to get the eggs in condoms, slung between their legs, because they knew if they broke, still egg, you see. And the guards never thought about that. But on this Davidovsky business, that's what I want to tell you. They used to get searched when they come in. But the guards were already bribed. They used to be carrying meat in from Davidovsky's for themselves, you see, and chucking off the lads. With the result that lads brought everything in. And the more they brought in, then the more the maids got, you see, inside. But they lost the job through stabbing the tins.
Was the situation that anybody above the rank of corporal didn't have to go on a working party.
Yes, you
was
see.
That it?
Yes, you see, they reckon, according to Geneva Conventions, corporals and above need not work if they didn't want to. But the Germans didn't say that. Hitler said it. The Führer has said that the above corporals don't need work, don't work. Where there was corporals and sergeants and staff sergeants, all kinds going out. But I wasn't allowed out, but I've still got 4 marks 20 a day. Only I couldn't spend it.
So they got paid for this work?
Yes. Every man got 4 marks 20 a day. But there was no to spend on it. It was Lagergeld, and you couldn't spend Lagergeld outside. If you knew a German, he could get a change for you. And that was where this chap I was talking about one day said, Mr. Prince is a good man. He bought me that ring. I said, where did you get the money? He said, I give him it. But I said, you've only got Lagergeld. He says, yeah, but Mr. Prince got it changed into Reichgeld and bought them. I says, Kit, he's only softening you up, mind, which he was. We never had a canteen. The only time we had a canteen, as I say, was at Gratz. After the French left, and after the French left, there was no there. So, life went on in the fort.
The food was no better, was it, that you were getting?
No, just the same food.
But it was the Red Cross parcels that...
The red part.
What about parcels from home? Were you getting anything
no,
from home?
No, do you know? I had one parcel from home, and it was a book called Gone with the Wind. And I never got that until a couple of years later at a place called Gratz. When I was on a course during the war, just beginning the war, on one of these courses, the billeting officer came into the billets where we were, all regiments, and he had a dollar badge in. He says, Sommager. I was a platoon sergeant then. Sommager. I'll take you to your billet. Got in his car, he says, I'm taking you to the best billet here. I think they call the place Middleton Tyres or something like that. And he took me to a big house. They call the people Baker, double barrel name. And Miss Mary came to the door and they introduced me and she said, oh, what would you do about baths? We only have 3 baths in the house. My one bath was for the staff and the other was for the family. And I said, don't worry about the baths. I said, we have baths where up there. Have you? Yes. So the officer says to me, I didn't know you had baths there. I said, aye. There's a big water bottle down there. Water bottle, aye? There's a barrel full of water. He said, that the bath? I said, aye, as far as I'm concerned. And the most embarrassing time I ever had, I met Miss Mary, lovely person, lovely people. One morning, she had 2 kiddies with her. And I said, good morning, Miss Mary. She said, good morning, Sergeant Major. She said, say good morning to the Sergeant Major. And the 2 kiddies said, good morning, Sergeant Major. And you know, I didn't know how to answer. I couldn't say, good morning, children. But there was, and in that house, there was a Jew cook. She'd come from Germany, and she said, kill a lot of them Germans when they get across there for me.
So you only got the one parcel, as you said. You said mail started to come into the camp.
Yes.
Were there any problems that you had to deal with where men were getting mail which basically said the wives were going off the rails or what have you?
You see, the first letters that came, of course, weren't the first letters that were written. But the result was, in them first letters, you got news about Soviet and Israel. Like, for instance, my wife wrote to me and said, Mary is bearing up very well. Mary was her sister. I don't know. I didn't know that John had been electrocuted. That was her husband. He'd been electrocuted at work, see? I didn't know that months later. And some lads got messages about their wives messing about with different people.
This must have been very difficult.
Yeah, very difficult. Some got actually letters from their wives saying that they were divorcing them in any case. Yeah. They just...
And did that bring those problems to you? How were they dealt
with? No. You see, they came through in a mail, and the mail was private to them. If they wanted anything like that dealt with, they would come to me. And they'll tell us, and I'll say that fellow that says, well, he's older than that. You know, I did what's older than my brother. He wouldn't say anything wrong. His wife hadn't had a kid while he was away. But the whole point is, they came to me with things like that, and I said, well, there's nothing I can do about it. After all, these have come through past the censor, and whatever's in that letter, the Germans already know. And some of the letters, you couldn't read them because they scored so much out.
So the Germans looked at every letter that came in?
Oh, yes. Oh, that is censorship.
Well, was that the same going out?
Yes. I forget now, I think it was two cards and two letter cards. Two letter cards and two cards, see? And most of my cards, I painted them, put pictures of them in. I was handy with it. And after the war, I was in somebody's house, a sergeant major in some part of the country. And on the mantel shelf, I saw two or three cards, and I had a cellophane wrapping on them. And I looked at them and I said, hey, George Rigg, okay. George, where do those cards come from? He said, well, you sent them. I sent them, you made them, for the kids' birthdays. And even my own family have got cards that I sent with a painting on it, see? But everything was censored. I wrote to my wife and I said, I don't seem to be getting many letters. And she wrote back and said, no doubt it's the German censor. He's saving them for his memoirs after the war. And the censor had on the bottom, I have too much to do. He dreaded, you see. All right.
Did the bad news coming in of the nature that we've discussed, did that have any tragic effects? Were there any men who did something tragic?
No, not to mind. A fellow would go moody, but I think the circumstances were, they say, that he'd been through so much that he didn't, more or less couldn't care less. But fortunately, I never had any news like that. Very few did, but there were this odd ones.
But mail would be very important to the prisoner.
Well, you see, every time you moved camp, of the dearth of mail, the mail had gone to their camp. I was once taken down to Schildburg. We were in Schildburg at the time. I was taken to the commandant tour in Schildburg to see the commandant. I was on a charge. I got away anyway with it. I issued parcels that shouldn't have been issued. But when I was there, there was a German came to me, these officers, as I walked through the office in the main house, I was all dressed up like a new uniform and everything. And let's say, a German came to me, the censor, and he says, Savage, he gave me a letter, an envelope, and I think it was three wood baits in it. He says, this boy's mother has sent some cigarettes in there, not loud. But will you give him the cigarettes and tell him to tell her not to do it again? Either way, you bugger. Eh? Now, deep down was the thought. And after all said and done, we always reckoned, and they always reckoned, that the nearest approach to the English were the Germans, in appearance, with the English. But the Germans wanted us to be able to tell our people what they shouldn't put in the letter. Where you couldn't tell anybody what not to put in the letter. You could tell them what not to keep out of the letter. And as my wife said, the German must be keeping them for after the war, for his memoirs. And he was so stupid, he wrote at the bottom, I have too much to do.
Did you see any, at any time, did you see any cruelty towards any of the prisoners by German guards?
No. Mistreatment, all like that? No. I was the only one that got beaten up as far as I was concerned. Maybe it happened that I didn't see it. But I never heard of anybody being beaten up or anything like that. I know there was a man shot. what they called a marshal. In Schildburg, I think it was Schildburg, it's a work party. Now, if you want a work party and you're digging trenches, if you wanted to go to the toilet, there wasn't any toilets, but what you did was you drew the attention of the guard and you said, "Abort," or "Abort," which meant you wanted to go to the toilet, see, "Abort." Yes. But when you go to the trenches to go to them, you left your shovel and your pick in the trench. Now, this lad, Marshall, had taken his shovel or pick with him. And when the German guard saw Marshall come towards him with his pick or his shovel, he panicked. And he shot Marshall, stone dead, within arm's distance. I've got a photograph of Marshall in a party in here. And Wei kept his clothes until the people came through from the protective party. Sweden, I think it was, Sweden and Switzerland were then our protective power because the Americans had come into the war.